Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 4th of January, recording at 9:33 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is Big Picture Long-Term Outlook for the various asset classes, but first let's have a quick review of what happened during the week. It was somewhat quiet, or at least it had fewer participants around, and it was also punctuated by the New Year's Day holiday at the beginning of the week. Number of markets were closed for much of the time, but there's still plenty here to actually talk about, not least in terms of our overall long-term outlook. But first, a quick look at the review. Quick look at what markets did in a review of the week. Now, stock markets were quietly steady, generally, and that includes today, where we mostly see gains where they're open. And in bonds, it's in terms of bond prices, it's been relatively soft as far as the governments are concerned. That means that yields have pushed upwards, of course, for the markets that where they've been historically low, the US, UK, bunds, and JGBs. They've all seen yields pushing higher in recent weeks, despite the QE continuing. Now, on currencies, the Asian dollar index has been really ranging higher since June, whereas we've seen relatively quiet activity elsewhere. Not a great deal going on with between the dollar and the euro and the pound. But neither of those European currencies is under any current pressure. The euro is trading just below 131 against the dollar. Sterling is staying a little bit above the 160 level overall. The big story in the currencies is the continued weakness of the yen, and that really is an important story, and it's up over the dollar is up over 88 yen in here today. Now, in commodities, a lot of different things going on here that are worth mentioning. First, let's take the staple grains and beans, and by that I mean these basic foodstuffs that you find in so many products, and that will include soybeans, corn, wheat, and also the rough rice. Now, food price inflation has been a problem in recent years, but what's interesting to see is that Chicago soybeans broke under the $14 this week. That's still high, but they nearly touched $18 only in September, and they look a little top heavy here still, because the initial, and it is still very much the initial stages, end of the planting season for most of these grains in South America, and they're beginning to grow, but it's been favorable here so far. That's helped corn to move back below the $7 level, again, still fairly high. And the range this year has been $5 to $8.50, between $5 and $8.50. No, I beg your pardon, that's last year's range, obviously, as was the range that I gave for soybeans. Now, wheat, the range in 2012 was $6 to $8.50, and it's now back below $7.50. And for both wheat, soybeans, and corn, we're seeing them trend down currently, and that included this week. Rough rice has been quiet, mostly in the $14 to $16 range, now at $15.20 to $20.28. So that has certainly not exacerbated the food price inflation that we had seen last year and at the beginning of this year. And that has moderated here somewhat. Now, also not contributing to the inflation pressures, although not cheap, the prices of crude oil, particularly Brent, because up around the $111 level, that's certainly not cheap, but it's not a serious problem either. And the most important point is that it's flatlined in here in a relatively narrow range, and that's actually going to continue given all the shale developments that we can anticipate in the years ahead. That's already having an impact due to the United States production. And then, of course, we get the renewables, heavily subsidized for the most part. But some of these, well, one, actually, solar energy in the very hot countries, hot sunny countries, Spain's an example, these are close to or beginning to move away from the subsidies overall. And that's good news for consumers in those countries, although again, prices of these renewables is still quite high. But overall, in terms of energy, we will see shale oil as it spreads. And it's a very political decision. Everybody wants to see what's happening elsewhere and check sentiment within their own countries. And nobody's going to introduce it if they feel they can get away without it. But if they have high energy costs, then they'll go for the shale. I'm surprised that Japan, maybe they don't have any, but I wonder, I haven't heard much about this. I'd be surprised if they didn't have some shale gas and oil. Maybe they feel that's too hazardous given the problems that they've actually had with earthquakes in so many parts of that country. But what I think is very interesting is that Shinzo Abe, the new prime minister, has sensibly announced that he's going to open some of the nuclear power stations. And I think there'll be fewer protests this time because Japan has suffered from high energy prices. Also, one of the biggest producers of shale oil and gas, not right now, but certainly in the future, certainly every year it will increase and increase significantly, and that's going to be China. Now, oil prices, I think I mentioned, had remained flat, but there's a considerable premium of Brent over the US WTI contract. Currently, Brent's just above the $111 level. The WTI is at 93 here today. That's a big advantage for the US. And the same applies in terms of natural gas, because that's still a very cheap, just above $3.25 in the USA, there's so much of it, whereas the rest of the world is paying considerably higher prices for that same gas. Now, industrial metals, they're low generally, but they're picking up a little bit, not least since China's stock market began to recover back in the beginning of December. And all of those industrial metals show clear evidence of base formation development, and there's even some base completion there. So we can expect prices to be edging higher, probably moving erratically higher over much of the course of this year. But that's not going to be a problem for quite some time, I think, and quite possibly not this year. Now, precious metals, and this is a little bit of a surprise for me because there has been a lot of selling in the last 2.5 months or so. They're still range bound, I should say, and their patterns differ well, particularly in terms of palladium, which is holding near the upper side of its range, although it hasn't been able to break up out of that range. But silver, platinum, and gold have all slipped down within those ranges. But now gold is really quite interesting here today because spot bullion is currently at 16.57, and that's down almost $7. But the low this morning in Europe was 16.25 and change. So in other words, we're $32 off that low. That's left a big tail on the chart, and we have oversold conditions in these three metals, gold and silver and platinum. And gold bounced right from the upper side of that consolidation formation near the lower middle side of the range, which supported the last run back up to 1800. That didn't hold, as we know, and the pullback was sufficiently large to suggest that we're going to spend at least another couple of months in this range. It has certainly questioned my overall hypothesis that we're in an accumulation phase here, because there's been, certainly been plenty of distribution, as I've said, over the last 2.5 months, selling pressure. But the pattern has not not these patterns have not broken downwards. They haven't broken down out of those ranges, which would confirm overhanging top formations. So it may be still all to play for. And well, the gold action has been frightening and discouraging for bulls, as is the silver action. Today, I think this is a bit encouraging. I should also mention that silver is back above that $30 level. It's at 30.26 and a half as I speak, and that's over a dollar off the low that it had seen this morning. Okay, so what's going to happen, and where are we going from here? And first, let's take these stock markets. Now, we're entering the fifth year of a bull trend, and some people may, scratch their heads and say, "Did I hear that correctly?" And I'll even repeat it. We're entering the fifth year of a bull trend because those stock markets pretty much all bottomed out at the either at the end of 2008 or in the first quarter of 2009. And we've seen some quite significant recoveries subsequently, not least last year. Now, a 5-year bull trend does create some concerns among analysts because they say, well, is that getting a bit long in the tooth? And you can't argue that it isn't, and the valuations are certainly higher. For instance, the S&P on a historic PE, that's at 14.83 today. The yield's only 2.18. The Asian valuations are lower here, and I think this is interesting. Because the Shanghai Composite Index, a mainline index, remember I said 14.83 on the multiple for the S&P, well, it's 12.59 for Shanghai, and the yield's a little bit higher too, at 2.5. And China has a considerably faster growth rate than we have in the US. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that its market's going to perform better, And you look behind those figures for the US, and there are a lot of very successful autonomies and dividend aristocrats in the US that are likely to be doing fine. And a number of those, a lot of those, yield more than the 2.18% for the S&P index. But this is just these are ballpark figures, which are worth knowing. The Hang Seng, that's from in Hong Kong, of course, China index. The PER, and I'm talking about historic, not estimated PERs, but the historic PER, is under 12, and the yield's 303. Now, yields are not high. As I say, most of these are in the, well, slightly more of them are in the 2% and above range. Taiwan, 3.44, and I already mentioned the HSI out of Hong Kong, that's 303. Kuala Lumpur, 3.5. Now, I've been excited by China since early December, so has Owen, of course. And I think a number of subscribers share our views on this. And I'm always interested in looking at who are the big suppliers for China, because that's one of the best ways to play China. And the Australian market has certainly sprung up out of its doldrums since the beginning of December, when China started to recover. And the AS 51 index in Australia, that yields 4.46%, and there are considerably higher yields, as you know, from some of Owen's reviews within that Australian market overall. Now, at times in the past, bull markets have been very profitable in Australia. It's lagged this time around, but as I say, I think this could be a good year for the Australian market, assuming that China continues to move up as I predict. So, what else to look at here? Staying with Asia for a moment, I think that well, the two big economies in Asia, of course, are China, second biggest economy in the world, and also Japan, what actually I think is currently the fourth largest economy in the world, just after Germany. Now, what Shinzo Abe's doing has certainly excited us. It's the right policy. He is going to devalue the yen. I'm not some sort of congenital devaluationist in here, but when everybody else is devaluing and you're not, and you're an export-oriented country, you're going to get in trouble. And that's exactly what's happened to Japan. So the yen is weak. That's made the yen a good short trade. And I wish I still had my short position in it. It's certainly justifiable by the chart pattern overall. And I will probably reopen it in the not too distant future. But long Japanese equities for their recovery, but also playing the yen short trade. My choice for that one, I had my short position was with the against the Australian dollar. Now, I think that's going to be the big currency story in here this year for certain, and it's certainly the most important currency that is being actively devalued here. There were some protests, I gather. I didn't actually see them, but I read about them from both the US and, gosh, was it the UK? I'm not sure. I can't remember, but definitely the US. And that's ripe, say, given the devaluation of the U.S. dollar that we've seen. It's the Fed's been very keen to keep the U.S. dollar soft overall. But I digress here. The point I want to make is that China and Japan, two big economies in Asia, they had been serially underperforming. That has all changed. I think it will continue. They will continue to perform, I think, throughout most of this year. And that's obviously good for them. And it's also good regionally. So I think we will see Asia being viewed rightly as a very competitive area in terms of equity performance and opportunities. And that's not always the case, and it wasn't the case for part of last year when we only had the ASEAN indices showing relative strength, but they're all showing relative strength here right now. Now, what about Europe? Europe is still recovering from the extremely low valuations that we saw, and when everybody except at Fuller Money was calling for the breakup of the euro, and I said, don't back what you think is going to happen or what you want to happen, but just take a look at what they're actually doing and saying. And if the leading central banker there, Super Mario Draghi, if he's saying that the euro is going to survive, and he would be signing the end for his European Central Bank and his own job in the process, although I don't think that was a big factor in his mind. It's just that I think all the forecasts that the yen was going to break up helped to bring those countries together and obviously the central bank and say, well, let's see what we can do here and to sort this out and stick together, hold the yen together, hold the euro together. And that's exactly, as Freudian slip there, and that's exactly what they've done. They've held the euro together, and it is no longer mentioned in the same breath as the word crisis. And I think we can see a little bit of additional appreciation this year in these European stock markets. Technically, that seems to be on the cards. And we aren't going to get any hikes in interest rates anytime soon within Europe. Incidentally, I think when we do start to get the rate hikes, that Asia might be near the forefront of that. But I'm not expecting anything like that to happen in the first half of the year. By far, the most important monetary policy change that we know will occur at some point in the future will be the ending or winding down of QE programs. It would all happen simultaneously. Japan is very late to join the party, if you'll accept that term for the QE, but slightly tongue-in-cheek, but the Fed is going to be the big one on this, because there's a massive amount of QE that's a big tailwind here for not only Wall Street but global stock markets generally, and they are going to rein that in at some point. Now, all the bond bulls are saying, oh, it's not going to happen within the next 3 years or perhaps even 5 years, but they would, wouldn't they? Because they'd love to see this position just hold so that they could rake it in. They'd like to see a recession in the U.S. So they'd be in a position of the Japanese investors who've been holding the JGBs. Well, I certainly don't think that's going to happen, and not with the U.S. at any rate. Even though the Obama administration is not as stimulative for the economy with all those tax increases as the Mitt Romney administration would have been. But he lost, Obama's there, and we know that the Fed will almost certainly continue with the QE, I think, for the first half of this year. But people are now starting to talk in advance, talk out loud about the eventual ending of the program. And that's policy, making people aware that this is not a situation that's going to go on in perpetuity. I don't know when it will end. I don't think anybody knows when it will end because it will depend on events. But I don't think that will happen in the first half of the year. Could it happen in the second half of the year? Well, they may start to cut back, but let's see. We'll have plenty of time to assess those prospects as we see the way the data unfolds, and there will be plenty of events to affect that. But while the QE continues, I'm a bull. We've got this massive monetary stimulus, and that is hugely influential, big tailwind here for equities. And they obviously don't go up every day or every week because there are plenty of other factors and plenty of concerns in the marketplace. But look at the gains you've seen in the 5-year bull trend, and you can credit a lot of that to the quantitative easing programs which remain in place. I do feel that I will be very cautious when we actually see that QE removed, but it'll depend where stock markets are at the time, and it'll depend how quickly they're likely to remove it. There'll be all sorts of different factors that we'll be monitoring, anticipating, preferably, and being and that we will be able to assess as the next year or more unfolds. But this is still a good time to be running with stocks. They're no longer cheap, but they're not overly expensive, given the QE tailwind overall. That's the point I want to make in here. And the may seem counterintuitive, but I've said this on a number of occasions previously. The time to be worried is when the economic data that's coming through is really quite attractive, and investors are emboldened, and that's when the Fed will start to cut back on the QE, and that will end this current bull market that should have a fair chance of some decent gains in here this year. And on that note, folks, all the very best to all of you.